Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce for Saturday, February 10th, 2018. It is 1:01 p.m. Members present are Representative Stutes, Representative Josephson, Representative Edgman, and myself, Chair Keto. Representatives Knopp and Wohl have excused absences, so they will not be here today. But we do have a quorum to conduct business, and we have been joined by Representative Birch. Please turn off your cell phones. I anticipate that this meeting will be relatively brief. We've heard all of these bills before. We will see where we end up with the sunsets, and then we have seven sunsets, and then House Bill 255, Plumbing Electrical Certificate of Fitness. Appreciate all of you being in here on a Saturday. And we will jump right in with House Bill 278, extending the Certified Real Estate Appraisers Board. If we can have Ms. Holland come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record. Just briefly reintroduce the bill to us.
Chair Keto, members of the committee, my name is Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. You have before you House Bill 278, which extends the termination date of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers for a full 8 years as recommended by the legislative budget and audit. With that, I'm available for questions, and Chris Curtis is also in the room.
Thank you, and I will also note that we have, as Ms. Holland stated, Ms. Curtis available to answer questions, and we also have the department available to answer questions. Do we have any questions on House Bill 278? See no questions on House Bill 278. We still have public testimony open. We do not have anyone signed up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 278? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at 1:03 p.m. And bring the bill back before us for discussion. Do we have any comments or discussion on House Bill 278? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion. Representative Josephson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee advance out of committee House Bill 278, version 30-LS1160-D, and it be passed from committee with individual recommendations and an attached fiscal note.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Bill 278 has moved from committee. I will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Record at 1:06 p.m. At this point, we'll bring House Bill 279 before us, extending the Real Estate Commission. Ms. Holland, and you're still on the record. I guess we can say that you are still here from last time. If you can reintroduce the bill for us.
Sure. Through the chair, members of the committee, you have before you House Bill 279, which extends the termination date of the Real Estate Commission for a full 8-year extension as recommended by Legislative Budget and Audit. Myself, the department, and Chris Curtis from Budget and Audit are available for questions if you have any.
Thank you. And same story as the previous bill. We do have department and legislative auditor available for questions. Do we have any questions for anybody? Seeing no questions, we'll move on. Public testimony is still open. And I do have no one signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at 1:07 p.m. We have any comments, questions, Representative Birch?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have I've been contacted on a number of occasions by constituent Deborah Berlini regarding the Real Estate Commission, and I think, as I understand it, she had some concerns regarding the responsiveness and the transparency as it relates to the Commission's activities and as it relates to an incident that she had happened on her property. I just wondered if anybody could speak to that you know, that, I mean, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know all of the aspects of that situation, but have there been any complaints leveled? And if so, how are they addressed through the chair?
Okay.
Through the chair, sorry.
Go ahead, Ms. Holland.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I do believe this is probably what Mr. Chairman was about to say. I do believe there's someone from the commission online available to address that concern.
Perfect.
We do have somebody online from the Real Estate Commission. So, Tracy Berrickman, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record, and would you have an answer to Representative Birch's question?
Yes, sir. This is Tracy Berrickman of the Real Estate Commission. I'm the chair for the Real Estate Commission. And sir, would you please repeat the question?
We have some testimony here. Thank you, ma'am. Through the chair, we have some written testimony here in favor of letting the Real Estate Commission actually expire. And the written testimony came as in her capacity as a member of the public and a homeowner. She had some concerns about transparency, in wherein she had attended a commission meeting, and there was it was. And I'm not sure if this is entirely in your purview or not, but. Related to a fire and an incident she had on a property she had in Anchorage. And I just, if this is unfamiliar to you, let me know.
I am, thank you, sir, through the chair. I am familiar with the letter that was sent, and the only thing that we could speak to that is there is a process. Complaints don't come directly to the commission. They go through the investigative unit, and then it's up to the investigator to determine whether there is jurisdiction, and if so, then it goes through a process and eventually ends up with the Real Estate Commission. So that is how the process works. I'm not sure if that's answering your question or not. So it wouldn't be appropriate for the Real Estate Commission to just hear it in a public hearing or a public meeting.
Okay, and I apologize. I'm not, you know, I've never attended one of your meetings. I'm not real familiar with how that, you know, how your commission operates. But so it's my understanding then I can respond that that the process includes an investigation and some research that's undertaken on behalf of the commission, and that work is underway.
Yes. Well, I can't say whether that particular case is underway, but that is the process. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Would you like to ask that question to the department?
Certainly.
Ms. Chambers. Thank you, Ms. Chambers. If you can place your name and affiliation on the record and let us know if you have anything you might be able to add to that answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing, and I believe also on the line is Sharon Walsh, who is our Executive Administrator of the Commission, who works on my team. We are familiar with the letter of which you speak through the chair, Representative Birch, and the complaint was reviewed by our investigators. As Ms. Berrickman said, it was deemed to be non-jurisdictional. It wasn't something that pertained to the work the Real Estate Commission does. And so that did go through the investigative process. She was, Ms. Berlini was contacted, okay, and then came to a commission meeting. And as Ms. Berrickman said, it was not something, a matter that was before the commission because it was not within their purview. And that may have just been an expectation that Ms. Berlini had that isn't how we operate. So if you have any follow-up or if she has any additional questions or concerns, I'm happy to assist.
Okay, great. No, through the chair, I appreciate that. Like I say, it wasn't something I was entirely dialed in on, but it's something I just want to. Usually, when these things pop up, you know, you have one thing pops up, and you know, there's a dozen others that are where people aren't raising their hand and saying they've got a problem. So I very much appreciate your response, and I will follow up here on our end. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Chambers. That brings the bill back before the committee for discussion. Is there any discussion on House Bill 279, extending Real Estate Commission? Seeing no discussion, Representative Josephson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that House Bill 279, version 30-LS1161-D, be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objection to the motion as stated? Without objection, we have House Bill 279 passing from House Labor and Commerce. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Record at 1:14 p.m. We will bring House Bill 280 before us. Ms. Holland, you can place your name and affiliation on the record again.
Through the chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. You have before you House Bill 280, which extends the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy for a full 8-year extension as recommended by Legislative Budget and Audit. We have members, someone from Legislative Budget and Audit and the department here available to answer questions.
Thank you. And do we have any questions for bill sponsor or the department or Legislative Audit? Seeing no questions, we have public testimony still open. Don't have anybody signed up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 280? Seeing no one, we will close public testimony at 1:19 p.m. And we have no other questions for the department or legislative auditor. Do we have committee discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion, Representative Josephson, I will entertain a motion.
Yes, I move that House Bill 280, version 30-LS1162-D, be passed from fiscal from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing no objections, House Bill 280 has passed from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Thank you. We'll bring House Bill 302 before us, extending the Board of Professional Counselors. We have Ashley Strock from Representative Josephson's office. If you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with the reintroduction of the bill.
Through the chair, this is Ashley Strock, and I'm actually staffed Representative Wool.
I apologize.
No worries. As a refresher, last time when we heard this bill, we did not have a board member online. We now have a board member online, Deborah Hamilton, for questions. But just as a refresher, the bill extends the Board of Professional Counselors for 6 years to 2026, and the board currently oversees 657 professional counselors as well as 73 supervisor certificates. And between fiscal year 14 and 16, they had a 46% increase in their licenses. So.
And thank you. Any questions for bill sponsor staff? At this time, I will invite Deborah Hamilton to place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony.
My name is Deborah Hamilton. I am the chair for the Board of Professional Counselors.
Thank you, and thank you for being with us here this Saturday. Go ahead and provide us with your statement.
I just, on behalf of the board, want to say that it's been a pleasure to serve on the board and that we would welcome and with great joy just the extension of our board.
Thank you. Any questions for the board president? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. Hamilton. At this time, public testimony is still open. Do we have, I don't have anybody online. Representative Edgerton.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify, was the extension for 8 years or 6 years?
Well, sorry, through the chair to Representative Edgerton, the extension is for 8 years to 2026.
Okay, I thought I heard 6 years earlier.
Okay, we'll make sure we get that clarified on the record. Thank you, Representative Edgerton. I do not have anybody signed up to testify on House Bill 302 at this time. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at 1:19 p.m. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. on the line.
Ms. Hamilton?
Yes, I'm still on the line.
Thank Go ahead, Mr. Representative Chairman. Birch.
Yeah, I noticed that the board is working to advance telehealth regulations. I'm keenly interested in telemedicine, telehealth issues in the distance delivery of services for mental health occupations. I was just wondering if you could explain that a little bit as to how that functions.
Sure. Sure. So in our regulations, when the Senate bill first came before us, I'm going to say about a year and a half ago, we wrote up some regulations that would help just guide what the stipulations would be for professional counselors to provide the telehealth service. So, and one of those stipulations would be a registration as a telehealth provider, and then some continuing education, and that's what our proposal is at this point, and it's waiting to be completed in the regulations.
Okay, yeah, so it's basically just administering mental health services and support services and counseling through the, basically over in a telecapacity?
Absolutely, and so what we're doing is wanting to provide some sort of guidance to do that in the safest way for the individuals that are receiving it in that way, but definitely supporting that as that it will increase the accessibility to mental health services.
Well, that's great news. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Ms. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. Do we have any other questions for the board chair or the department or the legislative auditor? Seeing no other questions, that brings the bill back before committee. Do we have any comments or statements about House Bill 302? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion, Representative Josephson.
Yes, I move that House Bill 302, version 30-LS1302/A, be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Do we have any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Bill 302 passes from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. In House Labor and Commerce, we now have House Bill 323 before us. Representative Sullivan Leonard is carrying the bill, but she was not able to be here today. So I will reintroduce the bill for us, and then we can open it up for questions for our legislative auditor or the department. So House Bill 323 basically extends the termination date for the Board of Pharmacy for 4 years. The reason the extension is for 4 years is the board, have been given additional responsibility relating to controlled substance and the prescription drug database. And so this shorter sunset extension is to review or have an opportunity in a shorter period of time to review how those new statutes are being implemented. Board of Pharmacy is composed of 7 members, 5 licensed pharmacists, and they must be licensed for at least 3 years preceding their appointments, and then 2 members of the public. And the board regulates admission to the practice of pharmacy, establishes and enforces compliance with professional standards and adopts regulations, and establishes and maintains a controlled substance database, as I had mentioned earlier. A board oversees licensing of pharmacies, pharmacists, pharmacy interns, pharmacy technicians, and pharmacies, wholesale drug distributors located in the state, licenses for drug rooms located inside institutional facilities, and also registers pharmacies located outside of the state if that pharmacy ships, mails, or delivers prescription drugs to consumers of the state. We have actually heard this bill before, but we also heard another bill that dealt with pharmacies, so I want to make sure we're not confused on that. I guess at this point I will open it up to questions of our auditor or the department. Seeing no questions, move on. Public testimony still open. Do we have anybody online ready to testify on House Bill 323? I do not have anybody. I do have, actually. We have the Chair of the Board of Pharmacy, Leif Holm. Mr. Holm, you did testify before us. Would you like to add anything to your testimony for us today?
No, thank you, Chairman, for hearing the bill again, but no additional testimony necessary. Just here for questions. That'll do.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Holm. We also have Richard Holt from the Vice Chair of the Board of Pharmacy. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at 1:26 p.m. That brings the bill back before us. Do we have any questions? I think I've already asked that question. I will ask it again. Not seeing any questions. Do we have any committee comments or discussion on House Bill 323? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion. Representative Josephson.
Yes, I move House Bill 323, version 30-LS1269/D, be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing no objections, House Bill 323 moves from House Labor and Commerce. We will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. PM, we now have House Bill 318 before us, extending the Board of Social Work Examiners. If Mr. Madsen, you can come forward and provide us a reintroduction of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Cueto. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Madsen, staff to Representative Ivy Sponholz, sponsor of House Bill 318, extending the Board of Social Work Examiners. Currently, the board is scheduled to sunset on June 30th of 2018. They would have 1 year to wind down their operations. The bill before you extends the board to June 30th, 2026, in line with the recommendations of the Division of Legislative Audit. I'd be happy to answer any questions for you if you have any.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? Any questions for our legislative auditor or the department? Public testimony is still open. And I have Danielle LaFon from the Board of Social Work Examiners online. Ms. LaFon, do you have anything you would like to add to your testimony from last time?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I don't have any additional testimony to add other than, of course, the board continues to support House Bill 318 and just want to be available for a question.
Okay, great. Thank you for being available. Do we have any questions for Ms. LaFon? Any questions for the department? Any questions for the legislative auditor? We will close public testimony at 1:29 p.m. And that will bring the bill back before us on the bill before the committee. Seeing no comments, Representative Josephson.
I move House Bill 318, version 30-LS1300/A. Be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Bill 318 is passed from Labor and Commerce. We will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Thank you. Thank you. We are back on the record at 1:31 p.m. At this point on the published agenda, we had included House Bill 299, which was extending the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. There's still a little bit of work left to do on that bill, so we've taken that one off of the agenda, and so anybody who's here for that bill can be done. I think we're done with all of the occupational licensing. Thank you, Chris. That brings House Bill 255 before us. Representative Tuck. Plumbing and Electrical Certificate of Fitness. We heard this bill early last week. You can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your reintroduction of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing House Bill 255 again. For the record, I am Chris Tuck, representative from District 23. And just a quick overview of House Bill 55. House Bill 55, basically what it does is it changed changes the violation of someone working in the industry without a certificate of fitness, also known as a license, from a misdemeanor down to a citation and a fine. And the reason why is there's virtually no way to enforce willful or repeat offenders, and we see that in the industry going on all the time. The Department of Labor can issue a letter of cease and desist, but they have to go through the Department of Law, find a district attorney to be able to prosecute, and then take the person to court. So it's a lengthy process, and it is shown to not to be very effective in affecting our current statutes. And so this basically puts it in line of what we do for a lot of business licenses, which shows to be very effective.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. We also have Ms. Deborah Kelly from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor for the department? Seeing no questions, we do have an amendment, and it is an amendment that has been discussed. If we can have the department come forward. And would, I guess, the department or either representative of the department want to introduce the amendment, and I will go ahead and move amendment number one to get it on the table. Do we have an objection?
Objection.
Speaker Edgman has objected for purposes of discussion. Thank you, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number one, what it does is currently the way that it's written is that once a person receives a citation, they can also, an individual who is an employee, once they receive a citation, they can also receive a violation. We're going to reserve the violation for the employer, and that way just the employee gets the fine. So this clarifies that by taking out in page 2, line 14, rather than a person only, which includes employee and employer, we're saying a person other than an employee. And why this is necessary also is putting in other than employee, because we have a lot of people acting as quote-unquote independent contractors that are doing work uncertified, that are not receiving instructions from an employer, and therefore they're also violating the law, so they'd be underneath the same sanctions as you would see an employer violating the law.
Thank you. And Ms. Kelly, do you have anything to add? If you can add your name and affiliation to the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Deborah Kelly, Labor Standards and Safety Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I do not have anything to add.
Thank you. Any questions regarding Amendment Number 1?
Yeah.
Representative Josephson?
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to make sure I understand. There was a penalty which was a misdemeanor, and I'm familiar with those, and we're turning that into a violation, which is I understand what those are. I mean, it's an easier proof. You don't have to show beyond reasonable doubt. It's a just an easier strict liability kind of thing. And then underneath, in addition to a violation, there can be a citation. Is that right? So those are administrative penalties. Do I have that right? So the most serious penalty would be a violation, and second would be a citation.
I would say we also have Terry Bannister, who's the bill drafter, online, and I'm not sure if this is a policy-related question or a technical question. So,
and if I may, I'll allow Deborah Kelly, the okay. Department of Labor, to also
Ms. Kelly.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, what we've got here is a multi-tiered process we're proposing. The citation is the process by which we sanction somebody with the violation. Mm-hmm. The other option we have here is an administrative fine.
And so I guess I will follow up. So they work in conjunction with each other? Is that?
Mr. Chair, correct. The idea and the way this works with some other licensure, for example, or similar statutes like contractor licensing, is for the first and second offenses, we usually just go with the administrative fine. However, in severe violators or those violators who refuse to pay or were having a hard time getting them to pay, then we proceed with the citation process.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, through the chair. What I'm hearing, or some of the concerns that I've heard, though, is that you're putting the employee between a rock and a hard spot, because if the employer directs the employee to do something and he says, no, well, I'm not going to do that because I know I can't do it, then he's been put in a position where he's going to get fired for not doing his job. So I guess I'm kind of in a quandary as to why there would be any repercussions to the employee as opposed to an independent contractor. I would think that you would exempt the employee.
If I may,
Representative Tuck.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stutz, we heard from Representative Knopp last week that he doesn't like the certificate of fitness, period. He's a general contractor. General contractors can't perform electrical work. General contractors should not be instructing their employees to do electrical work. What we have with in the electrical industry is to be able to, a contractor be able to perform that work, they also have to have additional licensing, and that's have an administrator's license. And so I know there's a lot of contractors that don't want to go through that administrator's license process, because you'd have to first go through an apprenticeship program, get your certificate of fitness, actually be working in the industry as a journeyman for a while, and then get three administrator's licensees to be able to write a letter of recommendation and then take even a more difficult test. And so that's the reason why we have that, is to maintain the integrity of the system. And so so I would tell you that employers that are doing electrical work are properly instructing their employees, making sure they have a certificate of fitness. At least they should be. to perform the work. So it's just maintaining the integrity of the system throughout.
Thank you, Representative Josephson.
So if I may add, Mr. Chair, there should not be any gray areas. It's pretty well defined.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Then Representative Birch.
Through the chair. As I understand this, part of the thing, obviously, taking a case before a jury on a misdemeanor is a complicated thing to do. And we saw how in Anchorage it used to be a crime to text and drive, and the mayor said, this is unworkable. Let's just make it a fine, and that passed the legislature. I sort of sense that something similar is going here, and I think that's fine. So under this bill, the most severe violation would be up to $500 and not be imposed on an employee. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, for the employer, we also have that other provision, which I failed to mention on the amendment, but not more than $500 on the employer.
Right.
And then for the employee, it's $125 for the first offense, and then it doubles to $250 for every offense thereafter.
All right. So follow up through the chair. So in some respects, this is, to the extent there is jurisdictional workplace confusion about who has the authority and training to do certain work in the field, if someone falls victim, or that's the right word, if someone is penalized, that penalty actually goes down under the bill. It just makes it easier to essentially cite someone because you're not going to court. Is that the essence of this?
That, through the chair, Representative Joseph, that's correct. I also want to point out that when you're working for an electrical contractor, you may have a valid certificate of fitness when you first start with them, but there is some responsibility on the employee to maintain that license. And that's the reason why there's a fine for if an employee lets their license lapse or if an apprentice lets their license lapse.
Oh, a follow-up.
Almost, and I know we're supposed to stick to the bill and make it germane, but just briefly, are there some areas in the field, particularly when it comes to, for example, digging ditches from a street to a home or commercial property, where there's a gray area where lots of different trades have historically participated, and there needs to be a meeting of the minds. I don't know if it's a conference or a new bill, not this bill, but a different bill, where those gradations get sorted out. Is there a need for something like that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there is, I was looking through the licensing laws last night, and there are different contractors' licenses for that may only require someone to, for example, and I have to look at it again, install a piece of pipe, only 1,000 hours requirement, not the full 8,000 hours. So it depends on the scope of work. But basically, this bill doesn't address that, but basically there are provisions to allow someone that on more simple projects, but just making sure, again, that the integrity of the system is held and people are aware of what mistakes and the effect of those mistakes can happen if not properly installed.
Thank you, Representative. Follow up.
Actually, just one quick. The amendment itself, which I guess is really the thing before us, in some respects, if an employee either intentionally or accidentally, perhaps it's a disputed type of work, but in any event, in the first instance, while they might get an administrative penalty, they're not going to get a violation. And in that respect, does the bill actually extend some leniency? I don't want to say leniency, but is there something to that?
Very much so. So I'll just let you know, when we modeled this after other licenses that are required and everything else, and you know, right now it's a $2,500 fine. The first draft of this bill was having it equal between the employee and employer. I didn't think it was fair that the employee would have to pay the same amount, so we cut that in half, and then we also cut in half again for the first violation. So originally, the way this bill was drafted was $500 per fine per incident, whether you're an employer or employee. I also want to point out that a person practicing hairdressing or tattooing or body piercing, they all kind of have the same provisions. That's a Class B misdemeanor, and that's up to $2,000 for an individual, and then a civil penalty up to $5,000. And so this is, you look at all the other license requirements that we have out there. Even a home inspector can be a violation up to $500, an administrative fine up to $1,000. And so we made this very soft, if you will, in comparison to other licenses requirements.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just looking at the amendment, are we still talking about the amendment?
On Amendment 1, yes.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. On the penalty provisions, a person other than an employee who violates a provision of this chapter, I mean, a lot of this is focused on the individual and their certification or qualifications to do the work. But when it goes into a person other than an employee, the second half of that amendment restores a $500 or up to a $500 fine. I guess I'm still a little uncertain as to exactly how this unfolds from the standpoint of the individual who you want appropriately certified and qualified to be doing their work. I'm uncertain how this actually helps if it is addressing someone other than the employee.
Representative Tucker.
If I may, through the chair, Representative Birch, what this amendment does is it further softens the penalty on the employee. And however, it still maintains that if somebody is working a side job who is not an employee but is still a person, individual, who is not an employer but performing the work, they still have the same sanction as an employer would. So this further softens it for the employee. Also, it's not an increase on that fine. Our intention on this was that the fine wouldn't go above $500. So the first fine for an employer. So the first fine for an employer is $250, and then $500 thereafter. But underneath the provisions that we had to allow for a violation, the violation can actually go up to $25,000, which is the way it is currently. So we put a cap on that. So that's a cap.
Clarification, you meant 2,500, not 25,000?
No, for the employer, it can go up to 25,000. For the individual, it's 2,500.
Oh, okay. That helps. Representative Stutes.
No, mine wasn't to the amendment. I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Any more comments or questions about amendment number one? Do you still maintain your objection?
Objection removed.
Objection has been removed. Do we have any other objections to amendment number one? Without objection, amendment number one has been adopted for the bill. That brings the bill back before us. Do we have any other questions or comments about the bill now as amended? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. So let me see if I have this understood, this bill. So everybody's been talking about a ditch. There was a ditch that was dug. There's a pipe in it. The wire's in the pipe. Do you have to have a certificate of fitness to be able to drive the big truck to cover that pipe up with dirt?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, the way the policy is now is yes, you do have to have a certificate of fitness to install the pipe, to install the wire, to dig the ditch and to backfill the ditch, to set the poles, to set the gear. Yes, all that is maintaining. And the reason why that is if you have too many contractors working on the same system, it's hard to know when the system goes wrong who's to blame for it. And so to maintain the integrity of the system and to have clear lines in case there's a fault, in case there's an accident, in case something was installed improperly, there's no finger pointing. It's very clear.
Follow up.
Thank you. It just seems a little restrictive to me. It seems like we're kind of putting our general laborers out of work by being that restrictive in who can backfill a hole. Anyway, thank you. Appreciate it.
And I think, Representative Tuck, just my question is this bill changing any of that, the individual responsibilities, or is this changing the penalties that the department can assess?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just changing the penalties, but then we also heard from Representative Knopp how, you know, he didn't even want to have the penalties because he says any time that you have better enforcement, basically, then he says he says that, yeah, if it's not enforceable, then it's allowed. I mean, basically, is what he's saying. So I understand that there are contractors that may want to do that work. But right now, that's maintained by someone who has administrator's license.
Thank you. Representative Stutz.
Along that line of questioning, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. So currently, you are or you are not required to have a certificate of fitness to backfill?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz. Yes, you are required to have a certificate of fitness, and I can have someone from the Department of Labor. I think we have someone online right now that can answer that question for you. Will Harlan, he's the mechanical inspection chief.
So we do have Mr. Will Harlan online. Mr. Harlan, can you repeat the question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thanks for the opportunity to talk to the committee today. This is Will Harlan, H-A-R-L-A-N, from mechanical inspection.
Thank you. And did you understand the question, or would you like Representative Stutz to repeat the question?
No, I think I understood the question. So the as was previously mentioned, the current policy is that type of work does require a certificate of fitness in the state of Alaska. So this bill doesn't have any effect on whether or not a certificate would be required. That is a matter of the electrical code and the policy governing how we enforce that code.
Thank you very much, Mr. Okay. Chair. That makes it a little clearer in my mind.
Thank you. Representative Justin.
Through the chair, is there something called a utility card that would allow someone who doesn't have a certificate of fitness to do some of the work described in the previous question?
Mr. Harlan?
I'm sorry, through the chair, if I could get some clarification on the question, a public utility card, is that what the question was?
Yes. Does that enable someone who doesn't have the certificate noted in the bill in 1862-010 to do some of this what I'll call in-between work?
Through the chair, so there, yes and no. The public utilities are exempted in other statutes for various types of work, be they electrical or plumber utility work, for example. There are already exemptions that exist elsewhere in statute that provide utilities with the ability to do work that's within their scope in a public easement and not require certificates of fitness for their workers performing that work at that time. Where certificates of fitness really come into play when it comes to utility-type work, be it electrical or mechanical, is when you have subcontractors bringing folks in who are not employees under the control of the utility. When those subcontractors have to do work on a public utility property, be it an easement or otherwise, that's when a certificate of fitness is required for those employees in that case.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Harlan? Ms. Kelly, do you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would also like to add to what Mr. Harlan said that we do also have some certificates of fitness that may be what you heard about. A plumber-restricted public utility certificate of fitness allows somebody to perform certain types of plumbing work with a much lower threshold and number of hours required than a full-blown plumber journeyman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, any other discussion on House Bill 255? Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Justin?
Yes. I move House Bill 255, version 30-LS0454-O, be passed from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections to the motion as stated? no objections. House Bill 255 has passed from committee. We'll take a – actually, what I'm going to go ahead and do is make our announcement, and we'll, if you can stick around, we'll sign the paperwork, but I'll go ahead and adjourn our meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, February 12th at 3:15 p.m. We will be bringing up two governor's bills, House Bill 306, PERS TERS Distributions, and House Bill 304, Microloan Revolving Fund and Loans. Without any further business to come before Labor and Commerce, we will stand adjourned at 1:54 p.m. Thank you.